The word lockdown entered our lexicon in 2020. Entire cities became ghost towns as we were all forced to stay indoors. Journalists too had to adapt, and face-to-face meetings with sources were replaced by phone calls or Zoom sessions. But there is one region in South Asia where lockdown is not a new word. In fact, it takes a completely different meaning. I'm talking about Kashmir, the valley at the heart of one of the longest running disputes and conflicts in the world. Both India and Pakistan stake claim to the valley, and there is also a sustained and consistent independence movement in Kashmir by those who see themselves as neither Indian nor Pakistani, but simply as Kashmiri. Hello and welcome to our very special podcast on media freedom in South Asia for the Asia Democracy Network. Jammu and Kashmir is the only majority territory in all of India on the 5th of August 2019, much before we had heard of the pandemic. India's Hindu nationalist government revoked the autonomy that Kashmir had had for the last 17 years, and its 8 million people under a strict military lockdown and a communications blackout. And when I say communications blackout, I mean internet, cell phones, even SMSs were banned for at least 2 months. It was difficult to tell what was really going on inside the valley, and yet journalists from Kashmir managed to get a story from beyond India's iron curtain over the valley. We're here to talk about how they managed to do that. Joining me from Srinagar, the capital of Indian-administered region of Jammu and Kashmir, is journalist Akash Hassan. Akash is a Kashmiri and an independent journalist. You can read his work in The Guardian, in Al Jazeera, and a host of other international publications. Akash, thank you so much for speaking to us and for being here.
Thanks for having me there.
I want you to take me back to the 5th of August. What were you doing when you heard the news? And what was your first instinct as a reporter, as a journalist? How do you report something like that? And, you know, the reason so many of us were able to work on international stories and across time zones and continents, even in this pandemic, is because we have the internet. And I don't think it wasn't until January 2020 that even 2G internet was restored in Kashmir. So, 5th of August, the news breaks that Kashmir's special status, which is guaranteed by Article 370 of the Indian Constitution, has been revoked. India's Home Minister makes that announcement in Delhi. What are you doing? Where are you? And what is your first instinct?
Morning of August 5, there was an uneasy calm. When I left my house and I tried to drive to the press club, which was barely 4 kilometers away from my home, I found that the entrance of the alley has been blocked by a razor wire. I had to pull my car and start walking. And it took me nearly 3 hours to reach press club because of the repeated and the barricades and the checkpoints on the way.
And this is a place that's just 4 kilometers from your house, and it took you 3 hours to walk because there was military barricading at every point on that 4 kilometer stretch.
Absolutely, there was military barricading, and there was the military, paramilitary, and police were fanning across. There were hardly a way to get through, and it was only after when I left in morning, I could reach to the press club by noon, and so did few of my colleagues. It was then in the afternoon that we switched on a television set in the Kashmir Press Club, which is located in Lal Chowk, Srinagar, that we got to know that the special status has been revoked, and we watched the Home Minister of India, Amit Shah, delivering a speech in the Parliament of India.
So the announcement happened when you left in the morning, but you knew that something big was going to happen because you saw extra security presence on the streets of the city.
Exactly, yes. The previous days, the days before August 5, there was uneasy chaos. There were a lot of rumors. Additional forces were being called into Kashmir. There was a war-like situation, as if a country was preparing for war. For example, the hospital rooftops were being painted with Red Cross. There were orders coming in the government departments asking them to stockpile. The small police checkposts in the peripheries were being called to the headquarters. So a lot of these things were happening, but no one was actually aware or telling people that what's going to happen. So yes, we definitely knew that something big is going to happen, but we had no clear idea that what it would be. For instance, I'm a journalist, but I was still not aware about that what exactly is going to happen. What I could do, like all other Kashmiris, to just stockpile some vegetables, medicine, fuel my car, and that's it. That's how we were ready. So on August 5, yes, then we got to know what has happened, but not too soon. There were the people, I could watch it on television that this has been done because I reached the press club, but I know there were many in my neighborhood who couldn't do that because even the cable television was not working. Not to mention that phones were already, had already stopped working, even the landline and other means.
Right. So then by the afternoon, you are at press club, you and other journalists around you have turned on the television. Amit Shah, the Home Minister of India, speaking in Parliament, announces this very historic decision that the autonomy that Kashmir had had for the last 70 years was done away with. What happens then? Because then I my first instinct as a reporter in that would have been that I need to get the story out. I need to write the story. I need to figure out what we can bring from Kashmir to us, to a national story such as this. But how do you write a story when there's no internet, there is no telephone? What do you do? How did reporting function in those early days?
Exactly. As a reporter, you start thinking that such a big thing has happened and you're on the spot, on the ground, but still you are not able to even contact anyone, leave behind your first job, like to report the events, the basic things, even to contact the family, that to know how they are. It was it looked like something impossible. It really was impossible. So that day, I fondly remember that all my other colleagues who had gathered around press club, we were all looking into eyes of each other and just, those helpless stares. We knew we cannot do anything because there were just few people around Lal Chowk other than the military and paramilitary personnel, and nothing was working. I remember, we just, for that whole day, we stopped getting our phones out of our pocket. We knew that it's going to be, it's something we have never seen before. And it definitely was like that. And then, that day we were in a park chatting with each other about what had happened to us and how we are going to maneuver now. But that was it. In the evening, we all left to our homes without any idea that how we will file our story. Back home, what I did is I pulled out my laptop and wrote a first draft of the copy what I saw. And that was there. Next day, again, I came to the press club like that. Again, no luck. On the, I think, third or fourth day, I tried on second day as well to visit my office, which was around, again, of the same distance, 4 kilometers away, but in the different area, but I couldn't reach because the paramilitary personnel stopped me even when I was on foot. So it was on third or fourth day that I managed to reach my office. There we were discussing that what to do. Basically, I was working that time with a television network. We had an office here with it was actually a TV channel, and I was working for their online part. So what I did that time is this idea came to mind of one of our reporters there that what we can do is capture the video of your screen, the laptop screen where I have written the story, and send the feed to the desk. Someone will write there.
So you had to,
only because
you had to click a picture of what you had written on your laptop and then send it to one of the live feed units that the television station has. So it's almost like, you know, something that we hear about in old times, how people used to send stories from one place to another.
Exactly, yes. We had never thought of it, and somehow this idea came to some reporter's mind, and we did live feed was sent to my office, and that's how I was able to send my first story. But let me tell you, most of the reporters were not that lucky that they could do like that.
Were there landline phones that were functioning at a few places, and who were they available to?
No, at that time, no landline phones were working at that time. Yes, only the phones and some landlines, I would say that some cell phones of some officials were working, yes. But these were not accessible to reporters or any civilians.
You know, Akash, we have this image in our mind of journalists being very hyper-competitive and trying to get a story before other people, competing with each other. But journalists also help each other out. You know, we also collaborate with each other. There is a sense of solidarity in the community. How much of a role did solidarity among Kashmiri journalists and photojournalists, I must say, some photojournalists went through great trouble, physical harm, to get some of the images out from what was happening inside the valley. So how much of a role did this solidarity among Kashmiri journalists and photojournalists play in getting the story of Kashmir out? Were you all helping each other out to a certain degree?
You know, despite the extraordinary restrictions put by the government, the Kashmiri journalists were successful at the end of the siege, if we can say. We can say that they were successful to tell the people the stories. And let me tell you, it was possible only because of the cooperation and coordination between the journalists on the ground. How did we help each other? For example, there were no phones and nothing was working. If a journalist from South Kashmir would visit Srinagar, he would sit with journalists, he would share the information, whatever he has. Basically, all the journalists would sit together, talk, share information, guide each other, help each other. You know, those who were not working with big media houses and couldn't afford a car, we would give lift to each other. I remember, you know, once we went to a story to South Kashmir, around 100 kilometers from Srinagar. Only three journalists could afford a car that time because of different reasons. So, but all the journalists, you know, those three journalists could, they you know, pull together around 15 people. So that's how journalists would help each other, not only but in terms of sharing information, but logistically. Everyone was supporting every other journalist in whatever means possible.
So you're saying the only way to get through something like this, whether it's a military lockdown or whether it's a pandemic related situation, the only way to get through something like this is together. Let me touch upon another aspect of what was happening then in the media, especially. The announcement was made in Delhi, as we've discussed, in the Indian Parliament, because the Legislative Assembly of Kashmir at that point in time had been dissolved. It wasn't in session. There was no Chief Minister, as far as I remember at the time. So the announcement was made in Delhi, in the Indian Parliament, and there was this effort by the Delhi-based mainstream media to portray that
yes.
There's a sense of calm in Kashmir, that everybody is happy, that there are no protests, and most people actually support this effort by the government. Some questionable surveys were put out saying this percentage of Kashmiris and people in Jammu agree with this. How big of a gulf was there in what was being said in Delhi, being reported in the studios in Delhi, and how people were actually feeling in Kashmir?
Let me tell you honestly, television in the mainland India was lying about Kashmir 100%. The Gulf you talked about, well, I will say that I will categorize the mainland Indian, the mainstream media in two categories. One is the television media, which I said was completely lying, and another is the print media, which I would say newspapers and online websites. Television was completely lying. What was happening on ground was not being reported. But what the government was trying to propagate and what government wanted to tell them was being told. But on the in the print media, yes, print media did a very good job, if not 100% right, but they reported the facts as it was. Because I remember later seeing the websites and checking the older copies, because at that time I was not able to access the newspapers like other journalists. But later we can see that print media did some good job. Yes, at times they couldn't report like the events as they happened, but we can, you know, say that it would happen because of many reasons. But what television was reporting was completely different from ground. The normalcy they were showing was not there. Yes, the crisis which were on the ground, the helplessness among the people, the anger, the crisis and everything which was happening on ground was not being reported at all in the television media.
And there was also, you know, for the longest time, television journalists, and actually, let's not use the word journalist for some of the people that we're referring to, because they're anchors. They are television
journalists. Yes.
They're not journalists who look at evidence and then, you know, present a story. They are television personalities. Some of these prime time television personalities said that there are no protests in Kashmir. But in fact, there were protests happening in the capital city, in Srinagar. Is that not true?
Yes, there were protests even, you know, as you said, capital, the Srinagar. When the BBC reported, and they reported it rightly, it was happening, and whatever BBC reported was 100% true. But then, and the other international media outlets followed it. But then again, television started showing it as a fake news, which is absolutely fake. In fact, they were peddling fake news. They were hiding the facts on ground. They were showing a fake normalcy. The television media reporters were being embedded in the with armored forces, with the government forces, to show that everything is normal. They were shooting from. They were taking the footage from the police vans. Yes, the streets were empty, but they were not showing that where are people. They have been locked down in their houses. They were not visiting the place where protests were happening. They were not visiting the place where people were. There was shortage of medicine. People, they were not visiting to the places where people were crying. They were wailing just to listen a word from their loved ones who they were not able to communicate with.
And in fact, another aspect of this lockdown that is often not talked about enough is the fact that Kashmir's economy got completely wrecked during this first lockdown. And then the second coronavirus lockdown came. And then, of course, we are in a state of a global financial situation, which is not great. But during that military lockdown, did the Delhi-based television media, did they, in your opinion, talk at least about the economic devastation on Kashmir?
In the initial days, as I can, as I remember, the TV journalists were only looking, the New Delhi-based TV journalists were only looking for the positive stories. They were somehow trying to, you know, just try to find people who can tell good things about the August 5 decision. They not only overlooked the human rights aspect or the, you know, the reaction on the ground, but they also overlooked the huge economic crisis which the region was facing, the unemployment, the job losses, the, you know, people were actually, there were a lot of people who would earn their living by doing daily wages. They would earn in the day and spend it in the night. They would. It was their own. They would work on the road on a cart and feed their families. But yes, like the Delhi media concealed and like they told lies about the protests and human rights issues, they lied about the economic aspect as well.
Right. So the way you're describing some of these television personalities, it's almost like they were the propaganda arm, even though they are private corporate media. It almost seems like they were acting like the propaganda arm of the government. That's how it is from your description. So from that, let me segue into my next question. Was there a difference in the way that Kashmiri journalists were treated by authorities, and the way that these parachuted Delhi television anchors were treated? Have there been instances of harassment of Kashmiri journalists and instances of five-star treatment being given to certain people who traveled from Delhi?
Absolutely, yes. I will not hesitate to say that the Delhi-based, the journalists parachuted from New Delhi were facilitated in every way by the government, by the authorities, not only in the way that how they will move around and how where they would stay, but when and on the one side journalists were pooling money to get to send someone with stories in the flash drive to their offices, when journalists were struggling for a phone call, when journalists were waiting in long queues at the media center where there were four computers to access their email, the parachuted New Delhi-based journalists were being ferried in the armored cars. And even I remember there's this one journalist, he tweeted that everything is normal. And the tweet, he was able to tweet, you know, that's itself a you can imagine what was happening. There were journalists who were able to use internet at the government facilities just because they were on the government side propagating whatever government wanted them to say to the world. They were telling the fake news that everything is normal and government was facilitating them, even giving them even the internet.
Right. You know, this next question, it's a little bit personal, so you know, it might be a difficult question for you to answer, emotionally speaking, because this is not, I'm not asking you as a journalist, I'm asking you how you felt as a Kashmiri in that moment. Because, you know, as journalists, we are told to remove ourselves from the story. We were told to be impartial and not care so much about the
story. Right.
But this is something that affects you personally. This is something that affects every Kashmiri personally. I remember, you know, all my friends in Delhi, Kashmiri friends in Delhi, were panicking for months because they didn't know if their family was alive or dead. And that is the experience of a lot of Kashmiris who were outside the valley. So as a Kashmiri who was in the valley, who had to also do this job of getting the story out, how are you feeling personally, emotionally? Has the time since August 5th taken a toll on you? Emotionally,
I think it was one of the biggest events of my life, and I will not be able to forget it till I'm alive. The situation certainly did take a toll. One, because I was a journalist working from this region, and second, that I'm also a native of this region. I mean, this lockdown, this military lockdown, didn't come only with the barricades, the barriers in my professional in the professional sense. It didn't only hamper my work; it also did affect my daily life. For example, my grandmother passed away, and I was on a reporting assignment, and I got to know about it many hours later. In fact, a day later. And I missed her funeral. I couldn't see her face for the last time. And the events, which I cannot mention here. So definitely, one, it affected my work and it affected our mental health because of how we used to operate. And second, how it affected our relations is something, you know, it's a dreaded memory, which we will hardly forget.
Well, Akash, we're in the new year now, and I think when the new year rang in, I'm not sure. I think it was journalist Ed Young, who said that this is not the end of the pandemic. This is year two of the pandemic. So there's a very good chance that journalists in different parts of the world are going to have to operate under lockdown again. There's a good chance that it might happen in different parts of the world. So as a Kashmiri journalist, who is not a stranger to curfew, who is not a stranger to restrictions and to communications blackouts, what are some lockdown lessons that you have for journalists in other parts of the world?
Well, yes, that's a very important question. And I think as I as we talked about it earlier as well, what I would say, you know, people's stories can be told even in lockdowns. If journalists start thinking out of box, journalists have to, one, there should be cooperation between the colleagues, that how we operate. We should help each other. The second thing is we have to start thinking beyond the conventional or the available tools we have to disseminate the news. For example, journalists in Kashmir pooled money to send one journalist to Delhi with the stories. For example, we realized the importance of these flash drives, pen drives. Speaking of the, you know, if I speak about the tools, for example, there was this internet shutdown, we were not able to send a story. We would write a story and save it in our pen drive, then give it to a person or near the airport, and he would take it to the outside world. For example, these sort of tools, I think, are very useful. And more than that, we have to think beyond sending stories on internet or using phone. We have to just brainstorm, talk to each other, and this can work. For example, if you don't have phone, how you will gather the information from the ground? For that, as I said, cooperation between the journalists is you know, it really helps. It really works gather, because
this is very interesting. So you said all of you would write down your stories on your laptop, put them on pen drives, on flash drives or hard disk. And then, say, out of a group of 10, 20 journalists, one journalist would get on a flight and you would pool money for that flight ticket, give all your pen drives to that person, and that person would send those stories to your respective editors and to the outside world. Is that how it was working in Kashmir?
Yes, absolutely. That's how it was working in Kashmir. Some, you know, there were some good Samaritans at the airport, some, you know, humble travelers who would willingly accept that they can take our pen drives. But then, you know, there are some confidential, there are some issues which you cannot give to a stranger. So we would pool money, 10, 15 journalists or 5-6 journalists, save our stories in a pen drive, give it to him. He would fly to Delhi and drop at our newsrooms, email them. For example, that's how, I mean, I think pen drive is one of the best tool which came to our help during this lockdown.
Right. So pen drives became the vehicle of journalism in Kashmir, even during one of the strictest and one of the worst military lockdowns that the region has seen in the last 70 years. Thank you so much, Akash. A big lesson that you've gotten from Akash as far as lockdown lessons is concerned, that stay together, work together, and all of us as journalists can eventually figure out the way to get the story out. Thank you so much, Akash, for being here and speaking to us.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me.